So let's get going with our first session of today. The Hung Groove, Stuttering on Early Recordings by George F. Hall. For those of you who might be familiar with that name, he is a candidate this year for a member at large, so that's probably one reason why you know the name. He began collecting and researching antique phonographs and early recordings in 1967. Nearly 40 of his articles on talking machine history have appeared in various publications, addressing subjects such as the origins of the spring-driven gramophone, American Zonophone records, and Columbia's entry into the disc market. He has conducted the Phonograph Forum column in the New Amberola Graphic since 1983. Mr. Paul co-authored two books, The Talking Machine and Illustrated Compendium, 1877-1929, which is a winner of the ARSC 1998 Award for Excellence, and the Antique Phonograph Gadgets, Gizmos and Gimmicks, which is, I guess, his current book. And he may tell you a little bit about that. He is currently working on a third book with co-author Timothy C. Fabrizio, dealing with additional phonograph history. That's my Gombada chief. Dealing with additional phonograph history during the years 1877 to 1929. Mr. Paul has contributed to the upcoming Columbia Phonograph Companion, Volume 1, Hazel Korn's Guide to the Columbia Cylinder Graphophone, and he is a licensed speech-language pathologist who works in an administrative capacity for the state of New York. Let's have a nice round of applause for George Paul.
Thank you. And good morning, Madison. Wake up, Madison. You know, serious collectors of early recordings are faced with a dilemma. As historians, we're driven to discover the truth surrounding a particular recording, the people who performed it, the company that made it, the people who bought it, and ultimately the society that's reflected by it. Such data can be gathered, compiled, and interpreted at a comfortable distance because the years insulate us to some degree from the sometimes distasteful truth we discover. Distasteful or not, such research is the means by which we develop a more accurate understanding of early recordings and the environment in which they were made. But how do we, as collectors, answer the question posed by our friends or our children as they listen to baked that chicken pie and ask us, do you really like this stuff? I speak today to a sympathetic audience whose members are acutely aware of the misapprehension on the part of non-collectors. It is the window to the past that we value. The images we see in it may charm or repel, but both are instructive. Many years ago, my interest was piqued by recordings in which stuttering played a central comedic role. Although a welcome change from the racially denigrating record so common of the period, these stuttering records were nevertheless poking fun at people struggling with a disability. Since the treatment of such communication disorders is a professional interest of mine, it seemed only natural that the category of stuttering records should be further investigated. Before sharing these modest results, however, it's important to have a very basic understanding of the focus of these recordings, the disorder known as stuttering. Charles Van Riper, one of the pioneers of stuttering research and treatment, defined stuttering in this way, quote, "Stuttering occurs when the forward flow of speech is interrupted abnormally by repetitions or prolongations of sounds, syllables, articulatory posture, or by avoidable struggle behaviors," close quote. It is these avoidable struggle behaviors which are usually most obvious to those observing a person who stutters. Happily, early sound recordings could not recreate the blinking eyes, facial contortions, body jerks, and head bobbing that accompany most severe stuttering behavior. However, the repetitions and prolongations of sounds and syllables, as well as audible tongue popping and whistling, are to be heard on several early recordings. To add insult to injury, imaginary stuttering characteristics, such as uncontrolled spitting were described in some song lyrics in order to enhance the entertainment value. Before proceeding to these, it is worthwhile to note at least one instance in which early sound recordings were used in an attempt to cure stuttering. Around the turn of the century, there were a number of stuttering or stammering institutes whose stated purpose was to provide treatment to eliminate stuttering. Charles Van Riper was himself a stutterer, and in his 1973 textbook, The Treatment of Stuttering, he wrote the following, quote, "In his younger days, the author attended several of these commercial stammering institutes, and from what he has read, they were typical of most of the others that exploited stutterers in the early years of this century. Each institute had its own minor variations in the treatment, but all of them employed direct and indirect suggestion constantly. One used arm swinging, another the swaying of eyes or hands or body, the third a lolling rhythmic form of continuous utterance in which all words were joined and all consonants were slurred. In each one of these institutes, we chanted slogans full of suggestion, such as the following, I will, I will, I will. I shall be strong, I'll not be weak, I shall not stutter, hear me speak. Or, I will be cured now that I have found the way. And at each one, we had the same interminable breathing exercises, lying down, sitting, standing up, chest breathing rituals, costal breathing exercises, diaphragmatic ones, abdominal ones. Our chests were measured each week to see if we were benefiting from the practice. We phonated single vowels in unison, then double vowels, then triplets and quadruplets. Then we ran them together, always watching and controlling our breathing. Then we repeated words and sentences after the instructor, timing this utterance with simultaneous swings of our arms, or dumbbells, or Indian clubs, or the pinching of fingers. As we chanted the suggestive sentences after the instructor, woe be unto any poor soul who stuttered then. He was banished from the group, fined, sentenced to spend hours in complete silence, or assigned great numbers of pages of reading to oneself, or held up to shame before his peers. In rereading this 40 years later, the author finds it hard to believe that he could have endured the charlatanry. But when one stutters terribly, and there is no other recourse in the world, one will put up with any folly and endure anything for the hint of hope." Close quote. One of these institutes was the Lewis Phonometric Institute and School for Stammerers in Detroit, Michigan. The founder, George Andrew Lewis, offered his phonometrophonic home course around 1907 with this explanation, quote, "It is not possible for everyone to attend a stammering institution. Many things enter into the everyday life of hundreds who thus suffer to prevent them from going away from home. The matter of expense must be considered by some. Others who could possibly bear the expense cannot afford the time. Household duties, business, and other home matters requiring attention prevent many from enjoying the benefits of an institutional training. My phonometrophonic home course solves the problem. I give you my personal instruction. You actually hear my voice, an accurate reproduction of it. My very accent and manner of speaking, with nicety of articulation for overcoming words ordinarily difficult to the stammer, are at your service whenever it suits your convenience. All that is best in the treatment of stammering and stuttering is embodied in my phonometrophonic home course." Close quote. For $40, the home course included a Lewis phonometrophone, in actuality a Type Q graphophone, 18 Lewis phonometrophonic gold molded cylinders manufactured by Columbia, and 3 books. In a carefully worded 6-page flyer, Mr. Lewis took pains to emphasize the fact that I could not under any circumstances afford to risk my reputation and the worldwide reputation of my institution for any amount of money. Yet the cautious Mr. Lewis made no claims for the effectiveness of the home course beyond making the following statement worthy of a Philadelphia lawyer. Quote, "Any stammer who devotes for a brief period each day their attention with study to my home course of instruction will quickly appreciate the beneficial results to be accomplished." Close quote. Despite the undoubtedly worthless nature of Mr. Lewis's products, we may take a somewhat charitable view of the phonometrophonic cylinders, since they were at least an attempt to treat stuttering. Most records which reference stuttering behavior did so merely for entertainment value. As early as 1899, Edison recorded a brown wax cylinder by Dan W. Quinn entitled The Stuttering Coon. Perhaps unique in its combination of ethnic slurs and ridicule of a disability, this title was popular enough to have been recorded in 1904 by Billy Murray on Victor, and again by Collins and Harlan on Victor in 1904 and in 1906. Columbia also offered a version, which was reissued on Standard and later on Silvertone. Such longevity should not be correlated with musical or lyrical quality. Before we play this excerpt, I should point out that the only copy I was able to locate is in rather poor condition. And what you're going to hear is a teacher attempting to coach the stuttering student in spelling possum pie, which is the subtitle of this work. And in the chorus, you will hear them both singing in unison to end the chorus, P-O-S-S-U-M spells possum and a P-I-E spells pie. So, without further ado, this is an excerpt from a well-worn copy of Victor Monarch record number 2755, featuring Arthur Collins and Byron G. Harlan performing The Stuttering Coon. The second earliest known title depicting stuttering is a Victor recording of 1902 by Len Spencer titled The Stuttering Monologist. This record was short-lived, the stamper being retired after pressing only 324 copies. I have so far been unable to locate an example of this elusive record. By March 1908, Edison had recorded Edward Meeker performing a song called Stuttering Dick. The Edison Phonograph Monthly described the two-minute cylinder as, quote, a funny song about the lovemaking of Dick Alexander Simpson, who stutters badly, with a damsel similarly afflicted. His efforts to propose and her struggles to accept are very ludicrous. The stammering chorus is funny. Close quote. Here is Edward Meeker singing the 1908 Edison cylinder number 9836, titled Stuttering Dick.
Don't storm, I can't stay through.
There followed a decade with few popular songs that exploited the sound of stuttered speech. In 1910, Victor released a record titled The Boy Who Stuttered and the Girl Who Lisped on number 16662, but this disc has not yet been found. An objective observer of the time might have concluded that people just didn't find stuttering to be funny anymore. Any such delusion would have been shattered in 1918. Perhaps the most enduring of all the stuttering records is the 1918 hit K-K-K-Katie, written by Army song leader Jeffrey O'Hara. The sheet music advertised the song as the sensational stammering song success sung by the soldiers and sailors. Its foremost exponent was probably Billy Murray. He is heard here singing the title on Edison Diamond Disc number 50490.
Hey.
Another offering of 1918 was titled O Helen and billed as a comedy stuttering song. Written by McCarran and Morgan, O Helen mixed the growing fad for stuttering songs with mock profanity. Victor recorded a version, but the lyrics were felt to be objectionable and the record was withdrawn prior to its official release. The management at Emerson Records was not so prim, and in 1919 issued O Helen on a 10-inch disc. Here is Eddie Nelson on Emerson 1008 performing O Helen. As the craze for stuttering records continued to grow in the early 1920s, a couple of novelty songs appeared which depicted stuttering. The first, in 1922, was a song simply titled Stuttering. Strangely, there were no lyrics. A snappy tune with derivative elements owing something to the popular hit Stumbling, the similar sounding Stuttering may have had nothing whatever to do with the speech disorder. Perhaps a title that resembled Stumbling paired with similar music was what the composer had in mind. See what you think. Here's an excerpt of the Broadway Dance Orchestra performing Stuttering on Edison Diamond Disc number 51045.
Thank you.
The next popular stuttering song to appear in the 20s was You Tell Her I Stutter. With a snappy tune by Cliff Friend and admittedly clever lyrics by Billy Rose, the song was a big hit and was recorded by several artists on various record labels. The best known version is probably Victor 18982, performed by Billy Murray in 1923. Another popular act to perform You Tell Her I Stutter was the duo of Ernest Hare and Billy Jones, sometimes billed as the Happiness Boys. On Triangle 11181, Jones and Hare delivered the song in their usual style and added a characteristic dialogue in the middle. Here's an excerpt from that recording.
Thank you.
Finally, the tremendous success of You Tell or I Stutter spawned at least one instrumental version, where the instruments were played in a jerky, repetitive manner meant to simulate the speech disorder. Following these musical representations of stuttering, the saxophone adds the laughter which the topic was expected to evoke. Here is an excerpt from Kaplan's Melodists performing the now familiar tune on Edison Diamond Disc number 51137. In the same year that You Tell or I Stutter was copyrighted, 1922, there appeared a little-known Canadian song entitled Kiss Me Again, written by Stanley and Allen. Kiss Me Again was recorded on compo by Billy Jones and on Canadian Berliner by Red Newman. The sheet music billed the composition as a funny stuttering song. I have not heard a recording of this title, but the lyrics, in my opinion, give ample reason for its obscurity. Now, it might be expected that this sensitive audience, while remaining sympathetic to the plight of record collectors in an age of political correctness, might nevertheless have experienced some anxiety during this presentation. Did you find some parts of these recordings to be amusing? Does the mental image of Bill McCloskey flushing red at the sight of his future in-laws on the porch bring on pangs of guilt as you attempt to stifle your smile? Do we, the enlightened people of the 1990s, continue to laugh at the misfortune of strangers? The Rolfs are laughing. Yes, I think we all know the answer to that question. For good or for ill, human nature does not change appreciably throughout history. But for those of you feeling a bit guilty, here's the last laugh. Stutterers, you have known.
Oh, they long and bold, the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin. If I know that he will have to break out from his island, there is no war. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. And so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for a thousand years, they will still say,
meet Winston Churchill, one of many prominent figures throughout history who stuttered. Many who stutter use what is known as controlled stuttering to make their speech more fluent. In many cases, casual listeners are unaware that the speaker has a speech disorder. You might be surprised to learn that all of the following people are in the ranks of famous stutterers. Clara Barton, founder of the American Red Cross. Lewis Carroll, author of Alice in Wonderland. Battle of Gettysburg hero, General Joshua Chamberlain. Naturalist Charles Darwin. George VI, King of England from 1937 to 1952. Novelist Henry James. Actor Raymond Massey. Founder of Time magazine, Henry Luce. British writer Somerset Maugham. Sir Isaac Newton. Opera singer Robert Merrill, James Earl Jones, Jack Parr, first host of The Tonight Show, Anthony Quinn, Carly Simon, country western singer Mel Tillis, novelist John Updike, chairman of General Electric John F. Welch Jr. The list goes on, but further illustration is unnecessary. Stuttering is no longer an object of mirth in mainstream American culture. The real value of these early stuttering records is in their suggestion of the nature of American society in the early 20th century. When we as record collectors are asked, "Do you really like this stuff?" we can continue to answer with a clear conscience, "Back off, I'm an historian." For supplying tape recordings of The Stuttering Coon and Oh Helen, I wish to thank Martin Bryan. Thanks also to my co-worker Teresa Shumway for her internet skills at a time when my own were undeveloped. And lastly, thank you all very much. Are there any questions? Yes.
John Lee Cooper, in fact, is a very serious stammer as opposed to stutterer. The record came out, I think, on Deluxe or something originally. I remember when it was collected into a long play record, along with some other early Cooper's performances in the late 1960s, and Irwin Silver, always the politically correct record reviewer of City Out Magazine, took Cooper to task very seriously for making fun of people with speech defects. It was very hard times of John Lee Cooper being totally unaware that that was the one record Cooper made with his natural voice. If you do this program again, I suggest you get a hold of the record. It is very easy to do.
Thank you. Yeah, there is an internet site that references John Lee Hooker quite extensively. Evidently, he made several other recordings that reference stuttering. I did try to, as usual, limit my presentation to the acoustic era, but I would very much like to hear the Hooker recordings at some point. Got another question here.
In 1949, I attended a Rotary meeting in Oklahoma, it turned out. And when the guest speaker was introduced as coming from another state, he had such problems speaking that within about 5 or 10 minutes, the audience was just in agony of sympathy and embarrassment for him. He then was introduced as Stuttering Sam, who was an entertainer performer throughout the Southwest.
So he wasn't really a stutterer?
No. So, I mean,
you know, only in America, right? When I was an undergraduate and took an introductory course in stuttering as a speech pathology curriculum, they had a videotape of a real stutterer, and rather than using any of his controls, this guy was so severe they just videotaped him speaking, and this videotape became somewhat legendary on campus because this guy hit a block and couldn't get out of it for 45 minutes. And we all sat there and watched this guy for 45 minutes trying to get through this one particular word. We all sort of left on all fours. It was pretty exhausting. Yes?
Just for the record, Jack Parr was at least the third host of The Tonight Show. Steve Allen was the first, and Ernie Kovacs shared it with him.
Which just goes to show you cannot believe everything you read on the internet. Thank you.
I have a question.
Shoot.
Are you aware of the Louis Armstrong recording, You Drive Me Crazy? Which isn't a stuttering record per se, but in the very beginning of it, there's a little dialogue between him and Lionel Hampton, who's the drummer of the band, where Hampton's stuttering and Armstrong making fun of that.
I'm not aware of that record because, you know, you guys keep bringing up all this kid stuff, you know, all this contemporary music, which... You know, I mean, maybe my kids would listen to that stuff, but...
Another question in the back.
I forgot the name of the artist, but there was a 78 of parodies of World War I songs where there was a parody on KD called KKP, you know.
Oh, KKP, I like that.
I forgot who it was. Was it John Ware? That's what I was just going to say. I thought it was Jeffrey O'Hara, maybe.
Well, he's the one who wrote the song.
Yeah.
Parodies of the Camp.
Yeah, Parodies of the Camp is his record on picture.
And then I think that I bought a record at a course, why not? I went to a record show a couple weeks ago. And in the comedy section, there was, and I don't remember his name, but he was billed as the stuttering comedian. He was billed as the stuttering comedian. I've yet to listen to him, but at the same time, anybody who stutters does not stutter while they sing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
See, so like all these songs that are sung are truly incorrect, and that's why everybody appreciates Mel Tillis, because he uses the stuttering in his comedy shtick, but then when he sings, he's a wonderful singer.
I have several friends who are stutterers. You know, I'm in that field. But one friend I met outside the field who is in music, and he's quite a gifted musician and a singer with a beautiful voice, and he does this professionally, and he's a severe stutterer.
So was my Sunday school teacher. I remember years ago, you know, she stuttered throughout the entire, little sessions on Saturday morning, Sunday morning in Baptist church, and then she was in this choir, and she used to do a lot of solos.
It is a fascinating disability.
And then Porky Pig.
Of course, there is always the famous Porky Pig. Yes. Any other questions?
I'm glad.
If I can make a shameless plug for those of you who have not yet seen our latest book, I do have a couple of copies, and they are available. So thank you very much again.
I didn't know you had one up here.